What does a better life look like for you in your community? And what do you hope the president can do to help? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. During this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we are asking those questions as a part of the nationwide conversation coordinated by NPR called A Nation Engaged. We want to know, what would make your life better? What would make your community's life better? And a community can be the geographical place where you live, or it might be a demographic group that you identify with, the gender, race, religion, or something else. What do you want the president to do to improve your life in your community? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Eric Giordano, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Marathon County. He's also Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Good to have you back with us. So this is every month NPR poses a question or two that we can ask as a part of the A Nation Engaged series. And as mentioned, the questions this month, what does a better life look like for you in your community and what do you hope the president can do to help? Let me just ask you, what does a better life look like for you in your community, Professor Giordano?
Oh, goodness. I mean, I'm just as interested in hearing what people have to say about this as you are. You know, as a citizen, I suppose I would say, you know, I want a local government that's responsive, you know, to the needs of the community. I can just, you know, pick one issue in the Wausau area where I live. I think we have some public transportation issues, and at the rate things are going, public transportation may disappear. You know, it would be nice if we could get the communities in and around my area to agree to offer public transportation in, more robustly to meet the needs of the community. So, you know, that's an issue that I personally care about. But, wow, I mean, there's so many issues.
There are, yeah, exactly.
Where you live.
Well, that's what I just wanted to kind of, you know, get the ball rolling a little bit. I mean, every community is unique. But do similar concerns tend to come up with voters in any place that you might go?
Well, they do, but they often aren't couched in local terms. So if we look, you know, over the trend of the last 6 months, say, and my source for this kind of information is Gallup and sometimes the Pew polling, but what we see that, and this really shouldn't surprise us, is that the main issue that people care about is the economy. Overwhelmingly, it's about the economy, how it's doing, and how it affects us personally. So, you know, do we have a job? Are we happy with our job? You know, do the people we care about have jobs? So unemployment factors in there. And then this is an interesting fact, so it speaks to this topic in general, Joy, that the next biggest issue trending over the last 6 months is dissatisfaction with government, generally. Now, of course, that dissatisfaction tends to, you know, be targeted at the national government, often state government, not so much local government, but the fact that it's up there is important. So those are the big issues.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've noticed that too, that dissatisfaction with government, and that could mean we're dissatisfied with the policies that are being put forth. It could be that we're dissatisfied with the gridlock that seems to be going on, and maybe we're dissatisfied with the polarization and the lack of civility.
Mm-hmm. I think all of the above.
Yeah, and I'm curious too. When we were kicking around this Nation Engaged idea that NPR is putting forth, what does a better life look like for you and your community, and what do you hope the president can do to help? I guess we were thinking, boy, what can the president really do to help us in our local geographic communities? Does the president really have a lot of sway when it comes to, oh, for instance, the mass transportation issue that you brought up?
Right. I think one of the biggest myths in our country is that the president has some kind of far-reaching power. I mean, it's not even true constitutionally, and it certainly isn't true in the implementation and operationalization of the president's power. I mean, really, you know, it's the people's branch, the Congress, that has the power to enact laws and the power of the purse string. Now, that's not to say the president, you know, isn't potentially influential. The one thing that everybody agrees that the president has in terms of at least a latent power is his ability to set the agenda, you know, and to have the megaphone to talk to the American people. But even there's a lot of disagreement about, you know, how much can he really influence policy? You know, many political scientists have tried to study this, and frankly, they keep coming to the same conclusion, which is that it's so complex, you know, the interactions with Congress and his ability to influence that agenda, and then in turn to influence the media, or is he simply reacting to the media? So we can only look at anecdotes, but overall, the findings are that the president has a hard time setting the agenda.
Yeah. And talk some about the idea of a community and I guess how broad that can be. We're finding out from other stations around the country, NPR stations, that some are looking at their demographic, their geographical communities. And I'm thinking that with the state of Wisconsin, we could have people calling in from all over the state, and you could talk about the most important problem facing you in your local city or village or township or whatever the case may be. But there's also the idea of demographic community. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, sure. I mean, this is an existential question, right? And we all probably are participants or members of multiple communities, and that's what makes life so complex but also so rich, right? So, you know, we have our cities, we have our towns, our villages, but, you know, sometimes we identify with, you know, a racial group or an ethnic group or, my gosh, if we're part of a club or, you know, an online, you know, community, a gaming community. I mean, everywhere I go, everyone's playing Pokemon Go. Is that a community? I
yes.
don't know. So, I mean, there are so many ways to look at this, and that's what makes it kind of life kind of fun, but also complex when we're trying to understand, well, how do we first identify ourselves?
Yeah. And we welcome your input on, and you can define it yourself. What would make your life better, your community's life better? And what do you hope the next president can do to help make your community better? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And you know, Professor Giordano, more than half of the nation's population will turn out to vote this fall or during any presidential election, yet the percentage is much smaller when it's a mid-year or an off-presidential year election or local elections. My goodness, that's just a small sliver, which you could argue the local election has a much greater impact on people's everyday lives. With that in mind, how do you increase turnout in races beyond races where we're electing a president?
Yeah, that's a great question, Joy. I mean, I've got my personal view on this, and I think there's some statistics to back this up, that really behaviors of civic engagement and participation start at a young age. And I think one of the concerns that we've had over the last decade is that there's been sort of a mixed results around, you know, the current generation and their willingness to engage, not necessarily engage their community. We know that volunteer rates are high, but the question is, are we helping young people to see the value of voting, to see the value of interacting with their elected officials, to get involved in campaigns? And I think what we see across the country in schools and in youth clubs, you know, 4-H and other things, that those groups that encourage young people to get out and get involved in their community, that has lasting impact on their likelihood of voting in the future. So, I mean, for me, it's about how are we educating and training, for that matter, young people to of the importance of why they need to vote and why they need to get involved.
Yeah, and with just a minute before a news break, why do you suppose most of us will vote in the presidential race, but even in a presidential race, we may not vote down ballot. We may not vote for Congress.
Well, there's a lot of theories about that. One is, you know, that people are somewhat apathetic, that they don't feel like their voice matters. They feel like the politics that affect them are so distant and distantly removed from their ability to influence them that they wonder, you know, why bother? So that's a big issue. Some people are busy. Some people don't care. You know, we don't have quite the strong, you know, same approach to voting as they do, say, in Australia, where, you know, there are mandates to vote and laws to vote. So some people say, you know, maybe we need to make elections easier for people to vote in.
We'll talk more about that, and we welcome your answer to the question, what does a better life look like for you and your community, after the news. As part of Wisconsin Public Radio's 2016 election coverage, we are taking part in a nationwide conversation coordinated by NPR on some key issues facing voters this fall. Our question last month was, does your vote matter? This month, A Nation Engaged asks, what does a better life look like for you in your community? So think about that. What does a better life look like for you in your community? What would improve your community geographically or demographically? And what do you hope the next president can do to help? How can the next president improve life in your community? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And perhaps I should ask, what do you think the most important problem is or issue is facing the state or nation, and what do you think the next president can do to fix it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Eric Giordano, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Marathon County and Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Let's take a call from Dave in Elroy. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I think the most important thing we have to do is to restore democracy to Wisconsin. You just talked about how you get more people involved. Well, people will get more involved when they feel that democracy works. We just had an election here not long ago in Wisconsin where there were more Democratic voters than there were Republican voters, and yet the Republicans got a majority in the legislature. Well, that's not very encouraging to tell people to get involved in politics when they feel that the system is rigged. So I think that's the first thing they have to do, is do away with gerrymandering and all these voter suppression things and all that kind of what I would call dirty politics that we've seen here recently in Wisconsin. Before you're going to start getting people more involved.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Dave. That's a good point, and we'll talk about it, but I'm wondering if you think more people are involved and we don't have gerrymandered legislative districts or congressional districts, do you think that improve life in your community?
Well, that's the big community. I mean, it's the things that are going on in Madison now in the last 6 years that have affected every local community. That's the overriding umbrella issue.
Yeah. All right. So Dave is concerned about gerrymandering or the process of redistricting or redrawing legislative or congressional boundaries. Professor Giordano, what can you say about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because here in Wisconsin, it's become a political football. It's become a polarized issue. You know, those who seem to be on the side of favoring changing the process for redistricting and so-called, you know, undoing the gerrymandered districts, you know, they tend to be leaning Democrat, and those who are fine, thank you, you know, tend to be leaning Republican. But what's interesting is that California faced some similar issues, but their legislature for years, for many years, has been dominated by the Democrats, and you had a similar kind of feeling among communities that, you know, they really wanted to make the races more competitive. So I think if we could look at this a little bit objectively, I think most reasonable people would say, if we could have a fairer process for redistricting, that would be good for everybody. The problem is, you know, who's going to make the first move and who's going to allow that to happen. And I would just add another piece to that, and I hope it's not trying to push one way or the other politically. I think as a citizen, you know, most of us would like to see greater transparency in government and making sure that, you know, decisions are being made in full light, mm-hmm. that, you know, even if money needs to be in politics because that's the way our democratic system insists that it be, that we know who's contributing, that we know where money is coming from, that we know how decisions are being made. I think we could all probably agree that government could improve in those areas.
Yeah. And just because, and again, I don't mean to be hamstrung by this specific question that NPR is posing in A Nation Engaged, but is there anything the president can do to help when it comes to gerrymandering?
Well, you know, it's a specific question with maybe a broader answer, which is, you know, one thing we've seen in this campaign cycle so far is that two candidates, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, have somehow been able to capture the imagination of a large swath of voters, different voters in some cases, but, you know, and they've somehow been very effective in using the sort of pulpit that they have, the ability to reach people to, you know, to say things and to inspire people towards certain actions. So what I'm kind of curious about is, you know, can there be some lessons learned from this? Can the, you know, the person who wins the nomination for their party and then I'm sorry, becomes the president, can they somehow, you know, use that platform to inspire people? And it'd be interesting to see if anything that's happened, you know, in the campaigns carries over into the presidency.
Yeah, so again, the bully pulpit, perhaps, but for the most part, if the state of Wisconsin is going to change the way it does redistricting, our state legislature has to do that, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, it has to be signed off also by, you know, the governor. And so, it's a political process. There's no doubt about it. The question is, can citizens agree that it needs to be changed and fixed? And, of course, this always happens automatically after the census. And so the question is, you know, do we wait until the next census? And, you know, will the party that gains power, you know, want to do that?
And, of course, the redistricting has also affected what's going on a national level, too, to some extent. The Congress is, you know, they're elected with boundaries that have been redrawn in 2010. And so that's one reason why we have gridlock. We have a Democratic president and at least a Republican-controlled House.
Right. Yeah, many people have made the claim that there's something around 75 to 85 competitive House seats. Now, out of 435, that's not very many, and, you know, on any given election, I should say. And so, yes, it the way that things have gone lately, it's tended to favor the Republicans in the House. And so, you know, it's very possible that, you know, gridlock could continue. It's, you know, even if Hillary Clinton is somehow able to come into office, it's very unlikely the Republicans are going to lose control of the House. So, yeah, it could be more years of gridlock. And the question is how locked will they be? And are they willing to work together?
Interesting. Lynn on Facebook says, Congress blocks everything. There will be no change until we have local control back, a state assembly that listens to the people, and a Congress that works together. What's happening now is ridiculous. So she's going both state and national there in terms of local control back. I'm trying to figure out what she means about getting local control back.
Well, you know, part of this is the argument around federalism at the state versus the national level, right? So those powers that, you know, aren't delineated for or reserved for Congress or the president, the executive rather, are reserved for the states. And so they have control over those issues. And there's, of course, tension around that. At the state level, it's a similar thing, especially in Wisconsin. Yeah. Those powers that are, given to the legislature and the executive branch by the Wisconsin Constitution, are delineated, and then those that aren't are theoretically local. But at any time, the legislature can pass a law or a statute to overturn local control. Now the question is, whose interest is it in? And I would just respond this way. People, and I'm one of them, we get frustrated sometimes with government, no matter who's in power. And, if we are frustrated, let's turn that frustration into action. Let's, participate more. Let's be part of the change that we want to see in our local communities. We're never going to be able to address every issue, resolve every problem that we see. There's always going to be an issue, that we don't agree with. But I think let's avoid the apathy and the cynicism, and let's get involved. It's kind of a cliche, but I don't think there's any other way we're going to make a change.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Eric Giordano, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Marathon County, Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. He is our guest as we, on this edition of On the Campaign Trail, take a look at a Nation Engaged question posed by NPR. What does a better life look like for you in your community, and what do you hope the president can do to help? How can the next president improve your life in your community? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, I was just going to go to a caller who hung up, and I'll try to paraphrase what I believe the caller was going to say. He thought that he said we got to quit blaming each other for various problems. I don't know exactly what he meant there, but then he said we need to support our police. So I think his point was that the president needs to do more to show support of law enforcement, especially given what's going on in the nation today. Your thoughts on that, Professor Giordano?
This is an extremely difficult and complex issue, and I was thinking a lot about this, prior to our visit today. And with the Black Lives Matter movement, with of course, which was spawned in part because of a lot of the videos that have come out around violence against African Americans, and then of course, most recently with the shooting of the police officers in Dallas, these are all tragedies, whoever is to blame or not to blame. And it's interesting watching President Obama, especially in the last couple of days, trying to really thread a needle around how do I, explain to the public that I really do think, or he really thinks, that African-Americans, have a point and have some issues that that they feel really need to be resolved in terms of police and community relationships around race, but at the same time explain to the American public that the police are extremely important to society and do a job that's very dangerous and that we need and that we and they're a group that we need to support and trying to find that fine line there. And at the same time, address the fact that we have some issues of race that, still need to be addressed. It is a very difficult situation. And, maybe that is an area where a president, either currently or in the future, can, use that bully pulpit to try to bring people together. I mean, we really have to address this issue.
Yeah. And I was just talking to a guest the other day who thought the president needed to do more to point out the unequal treatment of African Americans by law enforcement, and then another guest who thought that by doing that the president was being not supportive enough of law enforcement. So it is a real bind. Regardless of who becomes the next president, we will be a country divided politically and in other ways. Just overall, what can a president do to promote unity?
That's a great question, Joy.
An impossible one to answer.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I really believe that. Let's take a page from President Reagan. You know, everybody, especially you know, on the Republican side, likes to quote and take their page, you know, their starting point from President Reagan. What was it about President Reagan that made him the great rhetorician and someone that's, you know, admired by so many people? And, you know, part of it was his rhetoric and his use and his communication skills and his ability to inspire Americans and make us think about an America that was maybe even better than the one we were living in. And, you know, whether or not you agree with his politics, you have to admire that that attribute that he had. And so I wonder if maybe the next president, whatever party they're from, can, you know, speak in a way that can, you know, bring us to our better selves, you know, to inspire us around whatever the issue, whether it's race issue, violence, you know, gridlock. What can we do as Americans to be, you know, the best that we can be? And, of course, it would be nice to have a president that kind of backed up the rhetoric, but at the same time, that's a starting point. And I certainly hope we have a president that is, you know, willing to pay attention to what they're saying and bring people together rather than causing them to be divided.
Carolyn in Madison is with us. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Okay, yeah, it was something about common good. All right, we've lost sight of the common good. And Bernie Sanders sort of brought a hit of that back.
So Carolyn thought that that she would like a president who would fight for the common good, and somehow we have lost the philosophy of the common good. Did we always have that? That we let's do things for the common good.
Well, of course, everybody thinks, you know, all politicians, all Americans, that, you know, the way we act is in the common good. And that's the problem is we all disagree. We disagree often about what
is the common good.
The common good, right? Is the Affordable Care Act bringing us to the common good? Many of us think it is, and many think it isn't. But I think one thing to respond to your caller that Bernie Sanders brought to the table is, you know, not only did he have the rhetoric that I was talking about, which, you know, was kind of unifying to a certain group of people and inspiring, but I think people, and this is backed up in many polls and many just anecdotal experiences, they responded to him because they believed that he believed what he was saying. You know, everyone talks about his authenticity. You know, I just went with a group of students to Washington, D.C., and we met with a lot of leaders, and most of the students were Bernie supporters, and I kept, you know, asking them why, and they said, you know, because I believe what he's saying, whereas other politicians, I have a hard time. You know, whether you like Bernie or not, maybe your candidate could try to emulate that by, you know, backing up what they say with actions that kind of are authentic to their positions.
Yeah. And in just a minute before news break, you know, Hillary Clinton was saying, "Hey, I don't necessarily disagree with some of the positions of Bernie Sanders, but it's going to be impossible to get that stuff done with the Congress that we have or the political atmosphere that we have today."
Sure, mm-hmm. And that's what some people like about her in the sense that she's a pragmatic candidate. Some feel that you know, she will, you know, take on what she can and not try to do things that are impossible. But then other people are turned off by that. They, you know, they aren't inspired by that. They don't see change happening the way they'd like, and that's the dilemma that she has as a candidate.
With less than a minute to go, just this is not on topic, but how important was Bernie Sanders endorsing Hillary Clinton this week?
Well, I think it was important, but I think most people who have been looking at this knew it was going to happen. It was inevitable, and how it happened wasn't particularly inspiring. It wasn't, I didn't think that it came across as the most exciting endorsement. But inevitably, the Democrats had to come together, to give Hillary a chance to win.
Eric Giordano is associate professor of political science at UW Marathon County, director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, talking with us about our question today on the campaign trail. What would make your community a better place for you, and what can the president do to help that? What do you want the next president to do to make life in your community better? What can the president do to improve life for you in your community? That's the question that we are asking during this edition of On the Campaign Trail as Wisconsin Public Radio participates in the NPR series, A Nation Engaged. NPR stations around the country are asking this same question, and we want to know your answer. What is it that, what do you want the president to do to help improve your life in your community? How can the president make your life better, your community's life better? And again, community can be the geographical place where you live, or it could be the community that you identify with, the demographic group that you identify with, maybe racially or gender-wise or religion or something else. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Eric Giordano, associate professor of political science at UW Marathon County and director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Let me go next to Janet in Verona. Hi,
Hi.
Janet.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
The guest spoke about Ronald Reagan. I think that we need to go back to the times of Roosevelt and put people back to work. We need to have some federally funded programs that help people get back to work. You know, as I drive down the highway and I see all this wild parsnip that needs to be cut, that's a hazard for everybody. And then the condition of our roads, and there's so many things that really our infrastructure needs taking care of, and we need to put people back to work. And, you know, maybe change how people are hired. People that have been incarcerated need to be hired. This is a big problem about where our community is having issues, is that our African-American community is not being put back to work if they've been incarcerated.
Some really concrete, so to speak, ideas, Professor Giordano.
Yeah, I mean, very, very interesting, very inspiring in some ways. And I think, you know, the key is can we get some compromise and consensus around the idea that, our jail system is broken, our justice system needs improvement. I think there has been some movement here, but we really need to move it forward. And I think your caller has some interesting suggestions.
Yeah, and the specific about putting people back to work by, for example, an infrastructure public works project. To some extent, a little bit of that happened with the stimulus, and it's been proposed by President Obama, but it hasn't really gone anywhere.
Sure. I think there's been some experiments here and there. I remember reading about one in Milwaukee County where they were doing almost exactly what the reader described, but it was on a very small scale. And the question is, you know, how do you scale that up? Part of the issue, though, is that, you know, some people really think that, you know, they don't want government to be the answer, so they, or at least they want to see more public-private partnerships. But, you know, I think smart people can come together and figure out how to get this done.
Let's go next. Thanks, Janet, for that idea. Let's go next to William in La Crosse. Hi, William.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. What's your idea? What would make your community better?
Yeah, I think it would make my community and all communities better if the war on drugs was ended and drugs be decriminalized. That would help with the racial disparities in our justice system. And also maybe even legalize marijuana.
Yeah, and how does that make your community better?
I think it makes better by, first of all, reducing crimes. I think Colorado is a good state to look at with all the studies. And it actually will probably make us safer getting rid of a black market.
Yeah, well, Professor Giordano, what about that?
Well, I think the country seems to be more willing now to experiment in that direction, and we certainly see legalization really exploding, sometimes only for medical use, but still. And I think, some people are so reluctant to accept that, but I think these state experiments will teach us a little bit about whether that's effective or not in addressing some of those issues. And so we'll know whether the experiments are worth replicating.
Yeah, and again, that's at this point being done in some local communities, but there could be a national push for something like that, you think, Professor Giordano?
I think there's certainly a lot of folks who agree with that, and many of them happen to be, millennials and of a younger generation. So if not, immediately when this group starts coming of age and participating more and really having a bigger voice in politics, we may indeed see this happening on a much faster and broader scale.
Paula in La Crosse. Hi, Paula.
Hello. I have a little bit different take on that, but I think communities are getting more into these grants that are going into mental health and drug addiction, and I just think more needs to go into that. I think marijuana is just, I mean, when you think of the problems with heroin and meth and these poverty-ridden communities, I think a lot of it has to do with possibly that whole area. That's where they're making money, and it's just really, really sad, and more has to go into that.
Thank you, Paula. Does is there federal funding that goes into that, Professor Giordano?
Yes, there is, and a lot of attention is being paid to this issue now. And really, this is a huge thing that most local communities are starting to now grapple with, many at the ground floor. But it's a big issue. Most people can agree it's a problem. And I think this really is an area where local communities can come together and make a big difference.
Yeah. Getting a lot of good ideas now, or different ideas. I appreciate everybody's calls. Here's an email from Julia in Madison. Along with paid family leave, what my community needs is high-quality, affordable child care options. So perhaps universal, government-subsidized child care. Another thing that would help all caregivers, both those caring for children and elderly parents, is a universal income. I'm not sure I know what a universal income is. We'd pay the caregiver somehow that isn't working outside the home, Professor Giordano?
Or ensure that everybody, has an income and that wages are, fair regardless of what you do. But I'd like to address the caller's first point.
Sure.
Because I really do think there is a lot of common ground here. The science is in early childhood development makes a huge difference in terms of community costs, in terms of outcomes for children, in terms of behavior, education, future ability to be productive members of society. It's a no-brainer now. Most communities are recognizing this, and child care and family-friendly work policies are a huge part of that, and maybe the difference will be, some will not want federal government involvement, some will want this to be sort of a free market solution, but whether it's government or private-public partnerships, which I think are probably the smart way to go, this is an issue that communities can rally around, are rallying around, and really, again, can make a big difference in if they're willing to really address it.
Let's go next to Mike in Franklin. Hello, Mike.
Good morning. I have a couple of suggestions. So one being, I know in organizations that I've been part of, when you don't have a very visible leader, there's a lot of mistrust that goes on, and I think having a president that would be a model for all elected representatives and getting out around the country, talking to people, finding out what their issues are, and then bringing that back, and then using that as a platform for determining what type of legislation should be. I think there's just way too much stuff that's being gone on where things are being worked on and money is being spent, but a lot of people are still, like Janet had mentioned earlier, without jobs and things like that. I think we can also have a better model of working together. You look at examples of corporations in countries like Germany where you have people on the shop floor and the bankers and the board of directors and everybody all working together. And I think there just needs to be more collaboration amongst the different entities that have the power and the money in this country to solve problems.
Thank you, Mike. A reaction to that, Professor Giordano?
Well, I mean, this is a person speaking after my heart. I mean, I really think that more opportunities for citizens and residents to be involved, and involved in a way that makes a difference. And if we could have a president, and let's not even talk about the president, let's talk about our mayor or our city council, you know, that actually provides opportunities for citizen engagement, that listens, that, you know, takes into consideration what people are saying, that would be an incredible model. And I think people would be more willing to be engaged if they thought they were being listened to.
I'm going to end with one call, which I think will also be someone speaking to you. Ryan in Madison. Ryan?
Hello.
Yes,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to quote John F. Kennedy and say, that's not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And that thinking about what can the president do to better your community, it's really, to me, is a little bit unrealistic. A community is a microcosm of the nation, and the president's kind of this face of the nation. If you want to see change in your community, I think that what the professor just mentioned about local politics are more important questions.
Well, I don't disagree. Professor Giordano?
Yeah, I don't disagree. And you know, this is a tough question to ask what your president can do, because, frankly, my personal belief is not much, you know, and at the local level anyway. But we can. We can do a lot. And, you know, if I had anything to sort of add to this, it would be, you know, I think we've got to avoid the cynicism that comes in because we see the president, we hear the president, and we don't, and somehow we get the impression that he or she, you know, isn't doing enough or isn't doing anything. Well, of course, they can't really do much in that position that's going to directly affect our lives at the local level, but we can. And let's remember that government acts slowly. It was designed to be slow and deliberate, and let's manage our own expectations about what government can actually deliver.
Good place for us to wrap it up. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Eric Giordano, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Marathon County and the Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Thanks to producers Chris Molina, Brianne Chasso, and Nyasia Ellison. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We will be talking about the history of the U.S. Post Office coming up in our next hour and the future of the Postal Service. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.